From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour, starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Namdi. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst and the contributing writer for Washington City Paper. Tom Sherwood, welcome.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Later in the broadcast, we'll be talking with Anita Bond. She's an at-large member of the D.C. Council. Joining us in studio now is Sharon Bulliver, outgoing chair of the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors. Sharon Bulliver, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Tom Sherwood, quickly, let's talk about Montgomery County's new police chief. Montgomery's new police chief is its old acting police chief. He's like a suitor who was rejected on several occasions, and now finally he's been accepted into a marriage with the county executive, who at first did not necessarily... He was not the first choice, let's say, of the county executive, and he's been heartily endorsed by the county council.
Well, yes, a unanimous council. Mr. Elridge, the county executive, wanted to look nationwide for someone who would not be tied necessarily to the police department, but could maybe bring fresh voice to issues of community policing, sensitivity for minority training and those types of things. His two or three candidates that he considered, though, fell by the wayside one reason or another. So he decided he would stay with the acting police chief, who's been there for how many years? I've forgotten.
Well, he's been there for a while.
Marcus Jones, I've seen him. Yes, he's a veteran. I think he wanted outside ears and eyes to be. But everyone said that Marcus Jones would be and will be a good police chief, that he's sensitive to the issues that Mr. Elridge had raised. And so we'll see how it plays out, but it's been an agonizing 10-month experience.
On to Virginia. Arlington County Board Chair Christian Dorsey has not only filed a personal bankruptcy petition, but in his position as a member of the Metro Board of the Board of WMATA, the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, apparently he accepted a substantial campaign contribution, I think $10,000 from Local 689 of the Transit Union here. That was apparently a violation of the ethics rules of Metro, and he did not report that contribution until much later, and apparently had sat in on a few meetings that reflected a kind of conflict of interest.
I have to tell you that we've had Christian Dorsey on this program a couple of times.
A lot.
I'm not often, now that I've been around so long, I'm not often stunned. But I'm really surprised at this. Christian Dorsey just won re-election to the Arlington board.
He's the board chair.
Of the two members. Mm-hmm. On the Metro Board for Northern Virginia. Kathy Hudgens from Fairfax is the other. And he gets a $10,000 campaign contribution from the Amalgamated Transit Union. And he reports it in Arlington, but he doesn't report it to Metro, where it counts even more. It's like 25% of the money he raised. This is no small donation. And he didn't report it. And then it turns out, and he didn't tell any of the citizens about it when he was running for re-election, and then it turns out he's filing for bankruptcy because he says his public service keeps him from earning money. He's about in danger of losing his house. He's got credit card debts. He's just well overextended. I think this severely undercuts him at a time when there's great activity going on in Arlington, whether it's Amazon issues, the metro system. He was critical of Jack Evans, who we'll get to in a moment. And it just seemed like he failed to maintain his own personal economics while he was dealing with metros. And it's just kind of sad and embarrassing. The chairman, our guest here,
you know Christian Dorsey. You have worked with him in the past. Is this surprising to you?
I do. I know Christian well. Have always considered him to be, a fine colleague, and I've worked with him on Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, and as well as other regional bodies. He's just a good guy, and this is disappointing. I don't know what the story is, but it's just unfortunate.
Just based on media reports, is this something where he should reconsider his service on Metro, or is that it's that too early to make that judgment?
Does he get a second chance?
Well, I guess, that's something for him to discuss with Arlington and also with Northern Virginia Transportation Commission. I will say that, you know, he has been a real leader, knowledgeable person, and his loss on Metro would be very, very unfortunate.
Your terms on the Fairfax board went a long way towards cementing Democratic control, and now Democrats occupy all but one seat on the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors. There's just one Republican left on the board, and that's Pat Herity. And the Herity name, of course, is well known in Fairfax County since his father, Jack Herity, was the former chair of the board. Were you at all surprised by the blue wave in Fairfax and in Virginia on the whole?
No, I was not surprised. I think we could all see it coming. And I've served on the board long enough. This is my 31st year since I've been on the Board of Supervisors, and then I've been chairman for the past 11 years. But I've served under Republican majorities and Democratic majorities. The pendulum swings back and forth, but I think that we all could see a blue tsunami was going to change the dynamics of our board this year.
You saw it coming.
31 years that you go out of office at the end of this calendar year, is that correct?
Correct.
And you're kind of an accidental politician, that when you first ran, I think the Braddock District or whatever it was, that you were not going to run, that you kind of were, some people suggested you run, you ran, and you hung around.
Yes.
Was that right? In your first time you ran? You ran in the special election.
That's pretty much the first time that that I ran for office was actually in 1987. The Braddock District was called the Annandale District back then. And I actually didn't want to run for office. Right. I was shy, had a phobia about speaking in public. But got over that, especially walking door to door, introducing myself to voters at their front porch.
You are in my many years of covering, you are one of the most mild-mannered. You're strong on the council when you have a decision, and you're that way, but your public persona is quite mild-mannered. Even your goodbye party, I was looking it up. It's going to be on December the 9th at the Fairfax County Government Center. It's from 4 to 6. And you know, you can't get anywhere in Northern Virginia between 4 and 6 o'clock. So if you're not already there, you're just going to be a very small party, because the traffic, as I know from being out there this week, is horrific. But it is. Who's coming to this goodbye party on December the 9th from 4 to 6?
So this is a public goodbye. A lot of probably Fairfax County employees will be there. It will be at the Government Center. But other people who I've worked with over the many years that I've been in office. It's been a great ride, and it has been a real honor to have served Fairfax County and the region.
Before Kojo gets into your details, what are you going to do next? You're, of course, a mother and a grandmother, and, you know, I was just joking before the show, you know, you could be a new member of the Metro Board from Northern Virginia if Mr. Dorsey were to decide to leave. And Catherine Hudgens is also on the board of Fairfax. She chose not to run for re-election.
What's your plan?
Yes, there you go. I'm trying to tee her up.
You're warming me up for something. So, I don't have firm plans for things other than a little bit of travel, spending time with grandchildren. I have two little guys in Seattle, and I'd like to spend a little bit of time with them. I would like very much to write the story of the VRE. That's something that I would like to do. Virginia Railway Express. I was there.
You helped found the Virginia Railway Express commuter rail back in 1998. Talk about that.
So it was a great idea. When I was actually working for my predecessor, Audrey Moore, she and Elaine McConnell were serving on NVTC, Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, and a study had been completed that said it was feasible for commuter rail to be able to operate on the freight railroad lines, so long as the freight railroads gave us permission. So then when I was elected to office, I ran for Audrey's seat. I then was on NVTC and had the honor and the privilege of trying to bring things together as far as agreements throughout the Northern Virginia region for how we would contribute towards the operation of the trains. And we did indeed get permission then from the CSX and Norfolk Southern to allow us to run our trains.
How big is that? How much of an impact has it been to have commuters on VRE?
It's been huge. And if VRE disappeared, essentially, you know, we provide service for one whole lane of traffic on I-95. So that's the equivalent of the service and the passengers.
It had some troubles for a while with its schedules, but it's for recent times, it's been not in controversy.
We're working it out. So actually working things out with railroads, especially the more conflicts come on the CSX line, but both lines. Positive train control created, you know, some friction and some difficulty getting that resolved, but things are much better.
Federal law is such that the freight lines have priority, and you have to sneak in between them.
We work it out.
You oversaw also the massive redevelopment of Tyson's Corner, as well as the launch of the Silver Line. How would you describe the transformation Fairfax County has undergone in your time on the Board of Supervisors?
So Fairfax County is a very different place from what it was when I was first elected. And it's a little bit humorous, but I was elected on a slow growth platform.
Yeah. And, it's more than a little bit humorous.
And yet we've seen dramatic growth happen especially in areas of Fairfax County where the county has targeted growth in areas that are in need of revitalization. Merrifield, for instance, the mosaic at Merrifield. But Tyson's is the big story. And with the extension of the Silver Line from Falls Church through Tyson's on its way to Dulles Airport, it presented an opportunity for us to redevelop and reinvent the Tyson's area, which is really—
to make a more human scale as opposed to a place where cars drive into by the billions.
Exactly. So, previously it was a sea of impervious surface, and now it's a place where people will live and work and play.
Since the 60s, we all called it Tyson's Corner, and now it's been just called a Tyson's. What is the thought behind just calling it Tyson's and not Tyson's Corner, which in fact was a corner?
That's it.
It's not a corner anymore. Well, go ahead.
It's bigger.
Is it marketing? It's just a matter of marketing?
It's. I think it just puts a more correct title to the area. So originally, Tyson's Corner was the intersection of Route 7 and 123. And it was a shopping center, Tyson's Corner Shopping Center. But now it's much larger, a much larger area served by four transit stations, Silver Line stations. And it is already an exciting place to work, and more residential is being constructed.
Your departure means a major transition on the Board of Supervisors, so we need to talk about Jeff McKay, the newly elected chair, who is in some respects your protege. What are you looking forward to from Jeff McKay? And what do we need to know about him that we may not already know? Tom Sherwood likes these tidbits of information about people that are not well known.
So I think that Jeff McKay is going to be an outstanding chairman of the Fairfax County Board. I've had the opportunity to serve with him for the past 12 years. He's the lead district supervisor. And before that, he was an aide to his predecessor, Dana Kaufman. And I think that he was also an intern to Joe Alexander. So he's been around for a very long time, even though he's a young man. He's 44 years old. He has two little kids in our school system. I have encouraged him to think in terms of running for chairman. I appointed him to chair the budget committee. He's done that very, very, very capably, but also the legislative committee and transportation committee. So he's had, you know, a tremendous amount of experience that will make him, I think, an outstanding chairman.
It's a county of a million people now, over a million people. I don't know, on the Board of Supervisors, do you have bans on outside income, or do you, can you have jobs in addition to being on the board?
We do not ban outside employment. Board members have had outside employment. For instance, Pat Harity, who has served as a Springfield supervisor, has been a CFO for a number of different companies. I've done the chairman's job full-time. My predecessor, Jerry Connolly, worked in the private sector. So people do both. I would say that probably the majority of individuals serving on the Board of Supervisors have done so full-time, but not all.
One of Jeff McKay's primary opponents, developer Timothy Chapman, accused McKay of benefiting from a quid pro quo relationship with the developer friend, alleging that Jeff McKay got a bargain price on the home he and his wife purchased in 2017 in exchange for pushing action by the board that this developer wanted. Chapman's formal complaint triggered a police investigation, which at this point has not yet concluded. What is your response to those allegations?
I think that they are untrue. Jeff McKay bought a house. He bought it from someone who is a builder, who Jeff knew. The developer or the builder was not a party to the development that came before the board, so it was not a conflict of interest. And he paid full price for the house. Where's the controversy?
Is there some expectation that it'll be cleared up before he takes over as chairman in January?
I hope so.
The board has changed substantially, or is changing. John Cook didn't run for re-election. Catherine Hudgens didn't run for re-election. Linda Smith didn't run for re-election. You didn't run for re-election. How many members are on the board?
So there are 10 of us.
10, so that's nearly half.
Right, so that's about half of the board. Although I will say that the new members of the board are folks who are experienced. Rodney Lusk has previously worked as an aide to supervisor. I think it was supervisor Dana Kaufman, perhaps. But okay. He's then also served on the EDA, the Economic Development Authority.
I bring it up because you've had a difficult time. Northern Virginia has had a difficult time in Richmond getting your way on things, and now the legislature has flipped to Democrats, House and Senate. You were saying, I think your annual party for state legislators in Richmond wasn't very well attended by the governor and others who were in trouble back in the spring and winter. But now a bright door has opened in Richmond just as you're leaving.
I think that this election bodes well for an improved relationship between the General Assembly and local government in Northern Virginia,
which provides a great deal of the money to the state as a whole.
Exactly. We are the economic engine, not just Fairfax County, but Northern Virginia. And I think we'll find a friendlier voice than what we always have found.
What are you hoping that Jeff McKay and the board will prioritize next year? And what do you see as the greatest challenges still ahead for Fairfax County?
So some of the major issues that were on the front burner during the primary and the general election was housing, affordable housing. That's a big deal. That's a focus that COG has embraced regionally to make sure that we have an affordable housing stock for the commercial growth and the economic growth that we want to have, but also climate change, energy efficiency. And another issue that we're all concerned about is stormwater. And those are going to be major issues.
Is there something you regret not being able to get done during these last 31 years or so, something you would do differently if you could go back?
I don't think that there are things that I that I would do differently. I'm disappointed that it looks like the Silver Line will not be completed all the way to Dulles Airport by the time that I retire. So I expect that others will be cutting the ribbon, but I hope to be there to celebrate.
They'll invite you back.
I hope so.
What about policing in, of course, Fairfax? Do you recall what the population of Fairfax was 31 years ago, roughly speaking?
Gosh, I'm thinking,
it wasn't a million people, of course.
No, it was not a million people. It was probably more in the vicinity of like 500,000 or thereabouts.
So there's been a tremendous growth, a tremendous change in the demographics of the county. Have the police kept up? There've been issues about, you know, with the immigration and just treatment of people. And where is the police department as we look at the growth of Fairfax County? What changes could or may need to be done?
There was a crisis of sorts in 2013 when the police in Fairfax County shot John Gere outside his home in Springfield, and he was unarmed at the time. You had some problems with the county handled the subsequent investigation.
Yes. And the Gere case was tragic, but it also sparked some major reforms in policing, a re-engineering of the way we provide public safety and law enforcement in Fairfax County. Our new policies call for more transparency and a focus on sanctity of life when police are responding to a critical incident. Also, diversion first. When someone is suffering from mental illness, becomes involved with law enforcement, instead of their being incarcerated, so long as it hasn't been a major crime, instead being diverted into treatment. It's a more compassionate way of policing. And these are some of the reforms that we've been able to adopt.
What about a larger county board? You've grown so much. Should the board be expanded? I can't remember the last time it was expanded.
It was expanded the last time, I guess, after the 1990 census. So it would have been 1991-ish, right, when a new district, the Sully District, was created.
Quite a while ago. So is the 10-member board, is that enough?
I don't see a change in the 10-member board. I think we'll continue to have the same 9 districts that we have previously. Actually, we haven't had as much growth in recent years than we have had when I first was elected to the Board of Supervisors. So it's pretty much evened out, even with the revitalization and redevelopment that we've had.
Getting back to the issue Tom raised a little earlier, 31 years ago, you did not really plan on going into politics, and now you're saying again that your plan is to lead a more domestic life, but can you be lured into public service after your retirement?
No. I have definitely no plans to run for another office.
Volunteering.
Right. You don't necessarily have to run. People. You could be appointed to a board.
Right, you'd be dragged in. The governor could appoint you to something.
But this is my home. I'm not going anywhere, and I look forward to continuing to be engaged and involved.
Sharon Bulova, she is the outgoing chair of the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors at a time when she, as a Democrat, is overseeing a board that will soon have 9 Democrats and just 1 Republican on it. I guess go blue is what you'd like to say before you go.
What about, maybe just very briefly, Pat Herity, the lone Republican that, as Kojo said, a long good name in the county. What do you think, what would you say to him as you leave about how he'll get along with these 9 other Democrats?
We've always had, and I expect that we will continue to have, a board that is collegial. And Pat brings to the board issues and perspective that are important, and I think that he will find that his views are respected, as they always have been. Again, we've been a collegial board. I expect that that's going to continue under Jeff's chairmanship.
Sharon Bulova, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Sharon Bulova is the outgoing chair of the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors. Up next, Anita Bonds, at-large member of the D.C. Council. If you have questions or comments for her, you can start calling now. 800-433-8850. You can send us a tweet at Kojo Show or email to kojo@wamu.org. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picco and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst and a contributing writer for Washington City Paper. You're listening to the Politics Hour. Our guest now joining us in studio is Anita Bonds. She's an at-large member of the D.C. Council. She is a Democrat. Council member Anita Bonds, welcome.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here with you, believe it or not.
Questions or comments for her, 800-433-8850. Tom Sherwood, Rachel Curzius broke the story for DCS. David Grosso, at-large member of the D.C. Council, says, no more, I'm done, not running again.
Well, that's not what the story said. He's not going to run for re-election as an independent member of the council. He's got another year to serve. But you know, there are some people who are saying he plans to step away from the council job, stay active in the community, and run against Phil Mendelson in 2022.
What do you know, Anita Bonds? Do you know?
You've heard that rumor, haven't you?
I have heard that rumor, yes.
That's all we need to say for confirmation.
Consider it now.
No, he had, you know, he was the education chair. He is the education chairman. He's had some fights with council chairman Mendelson. Mendelson, when he rearranged the committee assignments, Mendelson put himself as a co-chair of the education committee, which was what's considered a slap at Mr. Grosso. Mr. Grosso has been the biggest person calling for Jack Evans to simply resign from the council or be thrown off the council. Mendelson has taken a more moderate approach to that. So there are lots of issues there between Mr. Grosso and Mr. Mendelson that could play out again in a couple of years.
A lot of people are calling already. Given the ethics problems confronting Ward 2 Council Member Jack Evans, before we get into any details of the report that was issued this week, apparently, there are two pieces of legislation that are going to be before the D.C. Council that would bar council members from having second jobs. I don't want to go into the details of those two pieces of legislation, but you might want to.
Well, just one of them, Kenyon McDuffie is the latest person. He has proposed that no council member be allowed any outside employment, and he wants to give the council a raise from about $140,000 to about $180,000 a year. Previously, Brianne Nadeau of Ward 1 had proposed legislation that would bar outside employment.
Except for teaching.
Except she made an exception for teaching, which, and that's partly because Mary Che is a law professor at George Washington University. But you have to say teachers are one of the most political groups in the country. They're unions, they're advocacy groups, the well-to-do universities. They demand, they want their say at these tables, and to exempt teachers, I think, would be maybe unfair.
Suffice it to say that Mary Che does not participate in discussions that having to do with her employer, which is George Washington University. Anita Bonds, do you have a second job? Are you looking for one?
I do not have a second job. And I must say that housing keeps me quite busy. So I'm satisfied.
Now, you did work at some in the past for Fort Myer as a council member or before?
When I came on the council, I was working for
Fort Myer, a construction company.
Mm-hmm. Would you be in favor of either of these two pieces of legislation?
I am in favor of, I think McDuffie's bill makes the most sense given the situations that we've encountered. Now, I have not made any decision or thought about an increase in salary. I understand why he would do that, because that would perhaps eliminate the opportunity for a second job or the income that those that have a second job may be bringing in now.
Well, you know, the CFO just put out a report this week that the district is in some of the best shape it's ever been, that it's better than any other, he says, any other jurisdiction in the country about paying for its infrastructure issues, paying off indebtedness. The city is in excellent position to maybe pay the elected officials more and make sure they don't have outside jobs. Others say, look, if you cut out outside jobs, then you kind of cut the elected leaders off from the communities. You don't get bankers. You don't get community leaders who are paid in their neighborhoods. You kind of shut them off from the community.
I don't agree that it shuts us off from the community because, as you know, we have the advisory neighborhood commissioners, and that's the front line in the community, and they are a very active group of elected officials. And I think that that's not a real issue that we have to look at. The real issue is a job and whether or not an individual should give full time to the work of the council. The council is broad. The work of the council is quite different from the 70s, the 80s, even the 90s. And I think it does require full time attention. And I think by giving it full time attention, we have better products.
And it has a lot more to do than a lot of other city councils across the nation because it has some state responsibilities.
Correct.
Also here. Tom Sherwood, let's go to Jack Evans before we go to break. And that is, there was the long investigation report that the council ordered finally released this week. It found that 11 cases over the past 5 years where the Ward 2 council member voted or took other official actions on behalf of paying clients of outside firms he was employed by without publicly disclosing them. That from the WAMU report. What's likely to happen next?
Well, our guests will have a lot to say about that, but you know, Mr. Evans, the report is quite damning for him for ignoring some basic ethics rules about what to report and when, and what he did, what he calls constituent service for people who were also paying him money. He has filed a response saying that the O'Melveny law firm that did the investigation misinterpreted the rules, did not recognize that some of the rules are kind of vague, a great deal of questioning of how they came to their conclusions. Now what's next is the D.C. Council, under Mary Che, an ad hoc committee that's been formed of all the members except Jack, will now decide what to do, whether to censor him again. He's been reprimanded, I think, and now whether to censor him or even, at the worst case for him, 11 members could vote to remove him from the council. 9 members of the 13-member council have suggested that he should resign and just save the city and the council and himself a great deal of fight. But we have a hearing. Mary Che will hold a hearing on November the 17th or 19th?
19th,
where this law firm will give its results in public, and the council members will be allowed to ask. And then Jack Evans will be allowed to come back at some point after that to appear before the council for his side of the story. Our guest here is one of the few council members who has not said whether or not Mr. Evans should resign.
Well, what is your position on the findings on this?
And you have known this, for people to know, you have known Jack Evans since before he was a council member in the Democratic Party. You may have known him longer than anybody there.
I have known Jack for many, many years, as you point out. Decades, that's correct. I knew him as an ANC commissioner in the community of Ward 2, where I lived at that time. But this issue is very, very difficult for us because we're all concerned. We're concerned about what does this say about our government. And while I would say all of us would like for Jack to resign, and he has said he will not.
All of us means you.
All of us. Okay. All of us. And he knows that, and I've spoken with him. But the issue is that he's not going to. He says he's not going to. And so that means this ad hoc committee has to move forward. And we'll have our first meeting on the 19th. And then we'll come back probably in, I guess, January. And then possibly we will take a vote. I said to him, I am very sure when we take the vote will be to expel you.
Would that include your vote?
It will be. I will.
Unless you hear something that you do not know now in the upcoming.
I'm not talking about it in the public. I've spoken to Jack, and I think that is really adequate. The issue is, let's have the process to move forward. I'm a little discouraged that so many of my colleagues, you know, kind of jumped out there and said, well, you know, resign now, or however the term has been put to the public. I think this is a man who has, for all practical purposes, has decades of service. His constituency, we're not hearing his constituency say, you know, he's been a bad egg. But he has broken our ethics rules. The rules that, by the way, and the standards that he had something to do with creating, because they were voted on by the council. And so here we are now hearing that, well, maybe I didn't understand the rules. Well, the rules are the rules. The standards are the standards. We all have something that we must abide by.
Can I just clarify this? You have privately spoken to him and suggested he resign. But you have not at this point decided that you would vote to expel him, because you're waiting to see what's said at the public hearing.
I'm waiting to see what's going to be said, of course, and that's the due process.
Okay. But that's the post editorial page today. He criticized Mary Che, in fact, said that you have to have due process rather than just popping off now.
I think so. I think, and we set up the task force to do just that. And that's why it's so discerning. And when I say, well, I'm so concerned about where we're going. I know you want to take a moment.
No, believe me, after the break, we're going to talk about housing, which is one of the things you want to talk about, and
you,
a lot of our listeners want to talk about. So
okay,
let me take a minute to ask you this. The Washington City paper reported that Jack Evans and two others plotted to have you introduce an amendment that would divert funds from Mary Che's proposed study on the benefits of public versus private utility providers. Were you aware that this was happening, that you were apparently being used?
I was not aware, and quite honestly, I thought that it was my idea to use this money that she was proposing in the Budget Support Act towards the seniors. I thought that was a better use for informing them of the, because we'd already voted for the merger, so trying to get, you know, them on board to understand what it means. And by the way, even today, people are still calling from the various companies trying to get individuals in their homes to make a decision about their electrical service.
I'm supposed to take a break here, but I think we're going to have to move through the break because there's so many callers and so many issues left to be discussed that we're going to have to take the blame for not taking that break today, because we need to talk about affordable housing in this increasingly gentrifying city. There's a public hearing coming up in November on the 13th to extend rent control and stabilization for another decade. Why is this so important, and what are the chances this extension will come to pass?
Okay, it's very important, and I believe that it will pass. Once we complete the hearing, we'll prepare our report from the committee. It will go to the full body. And the reason I think people, my colleagues, will support it is because so many people, so many citizens, tenants, even homeowners have indicated that they are supporting it. As you know, rent control housing is the largest tranche of affordable housing that we have in the city.
It's about 80,000?
It's about 80,000 units. And we estimate it houses more than 150,000 residents easily. And so it is so important to maintain housing affordability. We're one of the very few points in the country that has such a process. And interestingly, and now there are other cities that are looking at rent control, or rent stabilization, as it's called. You know, they have it in New York City and a couple of other, you know, large cities.
But
now
the DC bill exempts new housing, any new new housing is not under rent control. Is that correct?
It does. That's for this. But I am looking at how we can take the other approximately 50,000 units of what we call naturally affordable housing, which is also aging, and spruce it up, renovate it so that people will have continuation at a decent price point.
Here is Veronica in Washington, D.C. Veronica, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good afternoon. My question for Councilmember Bonds is, just for context, the average rent increase under a voluntary agreement is $1,500. And my friend Catherine saw some rents go up to 374% when her building signed a voluntary agreement last month. What plan does Councilmember Bonds have to close these loopholes that are responsible for why so many rent-controlled units are now effectively market rate?
Anita Bonds?
And that's a great question, and thank you for bringing that to the audience today. Voluntary agreements have been one of the most, I'll say, difficult and destructive ways for eliminating rent control units. And we're looking at it. We've had, through the committee, a working group that's been in progress now for about 8 months. They cannot resolve it or have not to date. The advocates and the tenants, of course, are saying it's terribly unfair. And then the developers and the housing providers are saying, well, but this is the only way we can do the necessary renovations and still keep everyone in their units. Voluntary agreements is a process where landlords can actually ask the tenants to sign an agreement to make sure you will continue to have your rent at a nice or affordable price point. But when the unit is vacated, other units are vacated, then the new residents will pay at a higher rate.
It's like buying them off.
Well, kind of.
Can you
like,
say? Would you say that sounds what it sounds like to me?
It's a very difficult process, and so we're looking at how I think ultimately we will have to discontinue that process.
Here is Tim in Brightwood on another issue. Tim, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm just curious about the council member's stance on public campaign finance. I know that the council member has received a lot from Fort Myer Construction, done a great job about representing her interests, and, of course, also has received many significant funds from corporate and other campaign contributors. So is that something that she supports? Is it something she would ever consider actually following herself?
With public financing for campaigns.
Public financing for campaigns. It's a way to obviously increase your campaign coffers easily. I think now for $25, you can multiply that times five, and you'll get that from the so-called public chess. I prefer and have been using contributions from not just corporations, but from individuals, and I prefer that.
Well, if you were to run for re-election, would you do the public financing route?
I don't know what I would do. Most likely I would not do the public loop, most likely.
Whomever does it, the reporting requirements, the form that needs to be filled out, we need to make sure that's both clear, but it's easier to report. All the candidates who are running for public financing are saying the reporting requirement forms are horrific. It's a good idea, but you don't want to burden candidates with writing up forms instead of collecting money.
Are you on board with the mayor's plan to increase affordable housing in the wealthier parts of the city, particularly Chevy Chase, Spring Valley, Capitol Hill?
Yes.
Well, that was an easy one. Here's Alan in Adams Morgan. Alan, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Kojo. Councilmember Bonds, you told the Washington Post reporter back in July that some of your colleagues are, quote, too quick to cry corruption, unquote, and that they are, quote, looking for innuendos with respect to the Evans matter. I'm wondering whether, in light of the O'Melveny report, you'd like to reconsider your words, including your characterization of those colleagues at the time as crazy.
You know, I'm not quite sure I know exactly what you're speaking of, but I stand by my attitude today. And my attitude today is that I believe all of us have requested that Mr. Evans consider resigning. I think it's better if he has his timing set as opposed to the body voting to set the timing for him. And so I'm going to stand by that.
I just got a text from someone who says it's huge news that you have called on Jack Evans to resign because you had not done so publicly before today. Is that right?
I'm not doing it publicly. I said I had a conversation with him.
Right. That he should resign because some people think you were one of his firewall votes.
Well, both you and Councilmember Vincent Gray have said that you want to see the process, the process go through. And, of course, Vincent Gray in particular has obvious reasons for saying that because of what happened to him during the course of his last campaign. But if you're going to talk politics in Washington, you have to talk race. And both you and Vincent Gray are African-American. And I have seen some tweets and in other places where people who feel that Jack Evans, because maybe has been around for so long.
Because he's white.
And because he's white, is getting the kind of break and the kind of length of investigation that African-American council members did not get. What do you feel about that?
Well, I think that's a very fair judgment of what is going on. But also, I think we have to take into consideration the time. You know, it seems to me that the time of D.C. today is quite different from 4 years, 8 years ago. And so I think we also have to take that in consideration. But there's no doubt that it's been a softer approach to Jack.
And Jim Graham, of course, was reprimanded by the council. Is that correct?
Correct.
And the other council members who got into trouble, Harry Thomas, Michael A. Brown, and Kwame Brown, were facing criminal charges. And we should point out, Jack Evans is still under investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office. We do not know if he's going to face criminal charges. That could really change the apple cart, let's say, if whenever that decision is made to go forward or not to criminally charge him.
I agree with you 100%. And, you know, it's, you know, as he says, I haven't been charged. You know, there's an ongoing investigation. The reason my clients took the fifth, because I was concerned about that, and I approached him about that. And he says, well, because there's an ongoing investigation, and they can't say anything. I said, well, you need to tell the world. That's the deal.
We only have a lot of time left, but I wanted to talk about some of your more recently introduced legislation. What can you tell us about the homeownership bills that you've proposed? We only got about 2 minutes.
Okay. The HPAP bill, which is the homeownership bill
primarily.
So I bought
my first home in the district.
All right. Fantastic. Well, now if you were to...
HPAP is Home Purchase Assistance Program.
Yes, exactly. If you were to try today, you would get about up to $80,000 for an individual. Of course, that's not quite enough for ownership, but you could afford a condo, you could afford a cooperative unit. And I've been very busy looking at the cooperative movement that we're trying to reignite here in the district so that more people, particularly at the 60 to 50% AMI, will have an opportunity to become homeowners.
Well, you know, the fact is a lot of African Americans are feeling gentrification is pushing them out of the city. Do you agree with that? I not agree that it's being done, but you agree that not agree with it, but agree that it's being done and need to take more firm actions.
Definitely, definitely.
Ron called to ask, and we only have about 30 seconds left. What plan do you have to stem the rising tide of violent crime in the city?
Oh, boy, I wish I had a magic wand. I think it's awful what we're going through. And I think it's particularly trying for neighborhoods because it's usually African-American youth against African-American youth. And, you know, we're killing off our people. And I think that is always going to be a problem. I'm not sure what we can do except get the guns out of the district. That is a very tall order, given the fact that a lion's share of the guns come from Virginia.
Well, now that the Democrats control the General Assembly in Virginia, there is likely to be gun control legislation coming in.
That may be number one on the list when they meet in January.
And
what impact
excited.
That has on the District of Columbia. Anita Bonds is a Democrat and at-large member of the D.C. Council. Thank you so much for joining us. Today's show was produced by Julie Deppenbrock. Coming up Monday, she landed in the national spotlight after a picture of her flipping off the presidential motorcade went viral. Now Julie Briskman is channeling her anger into serving her community in Loudoun County. She'll be here to talk about her new role on the county's Board of Supervisors, plus the transformative power of service animals. That all starts at noon on Monday. Until then, I hope you have a wonderful weekend. What's your plan, Tom?
Veterans Day weekend and honor our service members.
Yeah, we got to work, Veterans. Stay. But you have a wonderful weekend. I'm Kojo Nahamdi.
The Kojo Nahamdi Show is produced by Ruth Tam, Julie Deppenbrock, Margaret Barthel, Sydney Grannon, Maura Curry, and Victoria Chamberlain. Our managing producer is Mona Kashvi. Our engineer is Natalie Yurov-Lifker. Our intern is Laura Spitalniak. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Nahamdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.